Chapter 12. Kat surveyed the battlefield below. The Imperial army had pushed their way nearly to the top of the low rise. King Halvar and the others could not possibly know it, but from her lofty position, she was able to see that there were still three more massive groups of enemy reinforcements hidden in the forest, only a few miles away. Had she not arrived, this would have certainly ended in annihilation. There was a very good reason why dragons were feared above all other creatures, and an equally good one why the Dragonvane family had become so powerful. She'd heard from Martok's own lips how he'd used the mighty creatures during his many battles to spread his foes thin. Only a truly powerful mage could ever hope to contend with a dragon, and any army without one was sure to be burned to cinders from above without any hope of escape. As there were no mages at all within the Imperial ranks, this battle would soon be over. She could see that the Allied army's middle had at some point given way. While the dwarves were doing their best to eliminate those who had penetrated to the rear, it was clear that in a few seconds the line would collapse again. The Imperials were readying themselves for another surge. Maitre lifted her head slightly to let loose a feral roar. It was odd, in a way, to see the reaction below, with the furiously battling masses almost as one coming to a momentary halt. But it was the most temporary of pauses. Only a few seconds passed before the full force of the battle resumed. Kat pointed to a spot near to the thinnest part of the vanguard. There! Her command sent Maitre into a steep descent, bellowing flames all the way down. Kat was fully expecting the enemy to scatter, and frowned with surprise when they did not. Instead, she saw all but the very front row of soldiers dropping their swords and unslinging short bows from their backs. She responded with a spell that threw down a tremendous blast of wind, quickly sending most of the rising arrows back the way they had come. The few that did make it up to them did no more than tickle at Maitre's thick hide. Another stream of flames shot forth from the dragon's mouth, igniting flesh and armor in a broad swath of death. Yet even now, Kat did not hear the screams of terror she would have expected. No, these Imperials simply died without a sound. They were indeed silent ones, in every respect. Maitre landed hard, crushing more than half a dozen men beneath her. The flames she had created were still quite intense, prompting Kat to cast a quick protection spell around herself. Her skin immediately cooled. But even in the face of all this, the enemy was already converging. No fear at all, not even in the face of certain death. If dragons could smile, Kat was certain that's what Maitre would be doing right now. Using both her talons and long tail, she rapidly cleared an area 20 yards in diameter of all foes. So precise was she that the only living beings left anywhere within this were the dwarves. Every single one of the Imperial soldiers they had been fighting with had been clinically separated and swept clear by her wrath. Kat leapt to the ground. Maitre swung her great head around and met her gaze with reptilian eyes. "You know what to do," Kat told her. The dragon needed no further bidding. Turning, she opened her maw fully wide. The flames that shot out were accompanied by a gigantic roar that had every dwarf nearby frantically clasping their hands over their ears. On and on the deafening sound continued, and along with it the devouring flames that seemed to be drawn from an endlessly burning furnace raging somewhere deep within Maitre's soul. This was true dragon fury, the likes of which had not been seen on Lumnia in many centuries. Much as Kat wanted to, there was no time for her to linger and appreciate the spectacle. Backing away, she pushed on through the lines, toward where the enemy had broken through. Here, bodies littered the ground, soaking her feet with their blood after only a few steps. She closed her eyes and steadied her breathing. "Montromia Verunda! In nobio monts!" Her voice was like tempered steel, each syllable delivered with dire intent. In response, six figures rose from the earth, their bodies covered in green fire. Each held a sword in one hand and a whip in the other. With an unspoken command, she loosed them on the enemy. Faster than even the quickest elf warrior, they set off to do her bidding. Hard-pressed dwarves desperately fighting off two, three, or even sometimes four enemies at a time, suddenly found they had little to do. Like an unstoppable flaming force, Cat's creations slashed mercilessly at their imperial foes with both sword and whip. Every single strike they made sank deep and was fatal, too much even for the most resilient of silent ones. The blood pouring from their wounds quickly burst into flames, devouring them completely in no more than a few seconds. This was magic in its most lethal form, the kind that brought sheer terror to the hearts of dwarf, elf, and human alike. Cat almost wished Martok were here, so that she could thank him personally for this particular lesson. When he had first described it, she had been repulsed. The pain it inflicted was of the most gruesome nature imaginable. Only the most powerful of mages had any hope at all of defending against it. It took less than 10 minutes for her creations to complete their lethal task. Behind her, she could hear Maitre's bloodlust building as she continued to roast the enemy alive. Aside from the dragon's roars, it was now elated cheers rather than the clashing of steel that had become the dominant sound on the battlefield. Cat moved further up the ridge. From here, she could see clearly that the enemy was pulling back. "I guess even those soulless, silent ones know when they're beaten," said a young dwarf standing nearby. Cat smiled, but said nothing. Across the battlefield, she could see arrows striking at the low-flying dragon, though most were bouncing off harmlessly. The few that had managed to pierce her hide had barely penetrated, no more than scratches that Cat could easily heal later. This could be it. Maitre would not relent or show mercy.
"Katjana!"
She recognized her father's voice instantly. He was riding at a quick trot, beaming as he approached. His tattered armor told that this day had been hard fought. Nonetheless, he leapt from the saddle with the vigor of a much younger man. Cat ran to meet him, embracing him tightly as he spun her around several times.
"Why didn't you stay to the rear?" she scolded.
Eularion kissed her brow.
"I tried, but the enemy broke through. It was fight or die."
He looked over to where Maitre was still busy decimating the silent ones.
"If you hadn't arrived when you did, I think I might well have ended up looking much worse."
"Where are King Halvar and Kira?" Cat asked.
"I couldn't say," he replied. "I was planning to look for them once I'd found you and Ethan."
Hearing Ethan's name sent a knot to her throat. The reaction on her face did not pass unnoticed.
"I see," her father said softly. "Come, let us go find Halvar and Kira. The day is far from done."
6 more horses rode up, the soldier in the lead bearing the insignia of captain. His demeanor was one of frustration and barely contained anger.
"Your Highness," he said, saluting, "I must insist that you do not leave us behind again."
Eularion chuckled.
"Please forgive me, Captain. I know how much it upsets you not to be at my side. This is no laughing matter, Your Highness. You were nearly killed the last time we were separated."
His eyes fell on Cat, and he bowed his head.
"Princess Katjana, it is good to see you."
Hearing someone refer to her as princess made Cat feel oddly awkward, but she said nothing to correct it. After all, she was, in fact, a princess. She recognized the captain from the time she had spent at her childhood home. She bowed in return.
"Thank you. It is good to see you, too. And if my father runs off again, you have my permission to chain him to your belt."
Eularion laughed boisterously.
"He would if he thought he could get away with it."
His laughter had barely faded when Cat caught a flash of green light in the corner of her eye. It came from within a thicket at the far end of the battlefield. As the glow intensified, so it also began pulsing with rapidly increasing speed.
"What is it?" asked Eularion.
Her eyes shifted from the light to the low-flying Maitre, then back again. A feeling of dread seized her.
Knowing what was about to happen, she opened her mouth to cry out a warning. It was too late. Before she could utter even the smallest sound, she saw a stream of green energy shoot out, striking the dragon in the rear left leg. Maitre shrieked in pain and spun several times before landing with an almighty thud amid the chaos below. Horror-stricken, Cat burst into a dead run. By the time she reached the lines, a second blast had already struck Maitre, leaving her lying with her wings and legs tucked up tightly against her body. All around her, the enemy soldiers were still retreating, some even passing right up close beside the felled dragon, without so much as a glance. Then a third blast came. This time, such was its power, it propelled Maitre's massive body more than 10 feet across the earth, in the process sending bits of molten rock and scorched grass spewing in all directions. Although still some considerable distance away, Cat instinctively cast a fireball at the source of the attack. She didn't have time to see if it hit the mark. Without warning, strong arms wrapped around her from behind, holding her back.
"Get off me!" she screamed.
"Please, my lady." It was the captain. "It's too dangerous."
Cat would not be restrained. Squirming around to face him, she planted the point of her knee firmly into his groin, loosening his grip sufficiently for her to free one arm. That was all she needed. A sharp jerk of her elbow down onto the bridge of his nose was enough for his hold to fall away completely. Free again, she set off as fast as she could toward Maitre. With a grunt of satisfaction, she saw that her fireball had indeed found its target, and that the attacks on the dragon had now ceased. After covering 100 yards or so, she began to encounter enemy soldiers. Not that this was a problem. Apparently oblivious to her presence, they were simply retreating at a brisk trot, every one of them stone-faced, silent, and staring straight ahead. The only thing that did slow her progress a little were the large patches of still-burning earth where Maitre had recently unleashed her fury. These were quickly bypassed. Much as she tried to deny it, in her heart, Cat knew there was no chance whatsoever of Maitre having survived the attack. Only something of immense power could have brought her spinning down in mid-flight, and then blasted her mighty body across the face of the earth with such ease. It had to be one of the legendary dwarf weapons made especially for the Emperor. Another of these had already been used to destroy Eliphos, though from all accounts that one had needed to be augmented with the essence of Shinzan in order to accomplish such a mighty task. She did not think this current weapon had been treated in the same way. Even so, it was still unimaginably powerful. Maitre had not moved, and was still curled up into a ball when Cat eventually reached her. Frantically, her eyes searched the dragon's body for a sign of injuries. But there was nothing. No indication of any damage at all. Even with her legs and wings tucked in, something should have been visible. Perplexed, Cat placed both her hands on Maitre's neck. The very instant they made contact, an enormous rush of biting cold raced through her veins. For several terrifying seconds, she was conscious of being totally paralyzed. Then, mercifully, darkness enveloped her. As light slowly filtered into her eyes, she became aware that a pillow had been placed behind her head, and that her body was covered with a woolen blanket. The roof of her mouth felt like someone had fed her a particularly large spoonful of rock salt. As for her hands and feet, they were tingling furiously, as if the circulation had been cut off, and blood was only just now flowing back into them. "You're awake," said a kindly male voice. "Your father will be happy to hear that." Her joints protested as she struggled into a seated position. With her vision clearing, she realized that she was inside a large tent with several empty bedrolls scattered about. A narrow-featured man, with a balding head and dressed in a plain brown robe, was kneeling a few feet away. He was busy crushing leaves into a pestle. On the ground beside him were several different-sized bowls and phials, together with a variety of leaves and herbs, all arranged neatly on a silver tray. "Where am I?" Cat asked. He gave her a sideways look. In a tent, young lady, and that's where you are going to stay until I say otherwise. Though his tone was still gentle, there was a certain authority to him that said he was accustomed to getting his own way in these matters. Cat, however, was not one to take orders. Pushing herself to her feet, she headed for the nearby exit. The man moved with surprising speed to intercept her. "You must stay put," he insisted. "The mere sight of you will frighten the skin off people." His words instantly stopped her. She had expected the healer's argument to center around her health, displaying all the overcautious mannerisms that were common in most healers. But right now, her physical well-being seemed to be the last thing on his mind. "What's going on?" she demanded. "Why would I scare anyone?" Before he could reply, the tent flap opened, and Kira stepped inside. Quickly, she dismissed the healer. After giving Kat a firm embrace, she led her over to one of the bedrolls, from inside which she produced a silver flask. Kneeling down, she gestured to the spot in front of her. She appraised Kat for a moment, and then said in a gentle voice, "I see you are as confused as I expected." "I am. Tell me what's happening," Kat demanded the moment she was seated. Kira opened the flask, allowing the scent of whiskey to fill the tent. She took a small sip and cocked her head. "Normally I don't care for dwarf drink, but this isn't bad at all." She offered the flask over to Kat. "I don't want whiskey," she responded sharply. "I want answers." After taking one more sip, Kira closed the flask and set it aside. "Answers. Yes, that would be something. Actually, I was hoping you could provide some. But it is as I feared." Kat's patience was being stretched to the limit. "Kira, I love you, I really do, but if you don't tell me something soon, I swear I'll wring your neck." The elf smiled and held up her palm. "Forgive me. I'm not trying to be difficult. Honestly, I'm not. But please bear in mind that I was a long way off. Much of what I know has been related to me by others, and after what has happened—" She paused, but a low growl from Kat prompted her to quickly continue. "Yes, of course. As you will know, Maitre was felled by the dwarf weapon, and you ran to help her. Your father, who was following some distance behind, says that you reached out to touch her on the neck. To heal her, he assumed. Whatever the case, the very moment your hands made contact, both you and Maitre became engulfed in a sphere of blinding white light. That much I did see for myself, even from a distance. It was almost like a second sun had risen from the earth." Kat was straining to recall any of this. All she could remember was experiencing a biting cold, and then nothing. Kira reached across to touch her on the hand. "Perhaps it will come to you in time. Your father can tell you about it in more detail, I'm sure. From what I was told, he ran straight into the light to rescue you. Not even his loyal guards were brave enough to follow. But such is the love of a father, I suppose." This brought a smile to Kat's lips. "Yes, he is a good man." "I have learned this to be true," Kira agreed. "And from here on, it might be much better if he were the one to recount events." As if on cue, the tent flap opened, and King Eularion stepped through. Leaping to her feet, Kat immediately threw herself into his arms. "You will be the death of me, child," he said, his scolding tone a long way from being convincing. "I'm so happy that you're safe," she said, gently touching one of the scratches on his cheek. "Now, don't you go healing me," he warned. "I bear my scars with pride, thank you." "Scars?" teased Kira. "Judging from the way your guards are hovering over you, you'll likely not even get to scrape a knee from now until the end of the war."
"Can I help it if my people love me more than yours do you?" he replied with a half-smile. This was not like the formal interactions Kat had seen before. Kira and her father were behaving almost as old friends. In the same relaxed manner, after settling down with the two of them, Eularion's eyes quickly settled on the flask.
Without a word, he helped himself to a long drink. "You had better save some for Halvar," Kira told him. He chuckled.
"I would wager he has plenty more of this stashed away somewhere."
When he offered the flask to Kat, this time she accepted it. "Kira was just telling me what happened," she said after taking a small sip. "She remembers nothing," Kira added, "and I thought it better if you were the one who described what you saw." Kat leaned over to kiss her father on the cheek. "She hasn't said very much, but she did tell me how you charged in to rescue me."
Yularion's aspect darkened.
"I only did what any father would do, though even my courage was tested to the full by what I saw. I nearly ran away, you know."
Kat sniffed. "I doubt that."
"You don't understand," he responded. "When I reached you, you were changed."
"Changed? In what way?"
"I can't explain it. You were standing beside the dragon with your hands folded in front of you, talking to, well, to no one at all, from what I could see. It was like you were looking down at some invisible child and scolding it for being naughty. 'You shouldn't have done this,' you said. 'Now you've complicated matters.' Then you looked up at me and gave me the most curious look. And your face. It was mostly the same, but your eyes, they weren't yours at all. I knew right away that I was staring at a stranger."
He reached over and touched Kat's cheek.
"That's when I almost ran." She could see the shame on his face.
"But you didn't."
He forced a smile. "No, I didn't. But believe me, I have never been more afraid."
"Why?"
Yularion shrugged.
"I don't know. I've faced death before. But this was like staring into the heart of a great abyss from the very edge of a precipice. One small step further and I would be sent crashing to my doom. I moved closer to the dragon just to keep away from you, but you warned me not to touch her. She must remain pure, you said. A moment later, as if an invisible hand had seized me, I was jerked away from the fallen creature."
He took a deep breath.
"At this point, I finally managed to regain a little of my courage. I demanded that you tell me exactly what had happened to you. And that's when your voice changed. Completely. It was still female, but it now had a hollow sound about it, as if echoing from within a great hall, a strange mixture indeed of kindness and authority. 'Your child is unharmed,' this new voice said. 'She has done a great service to the world, albeit unwittingly. You should be thankful.' I asked her what exactly you had done, but received only a smile in return. 'You must fight on,' she continued. 'Gather to you all those willing to resist the evil of Shinzan. It will be through your struggle that hope is kept alive.' 'What of Ethan Dragonbane?' I asked. 'It is he who needs you the most,' she replied. 'And now, there is a way. Thanks to your daughter's bravery and sacrifice, new hope has arisen.'"
Yularion shook his head.
"That she mentioned the word sacrifice was enough to send panic racing through me. I insisted that she explain what she meant. I swear to you, she made me feel like an angry child being spoken to by a parent who knew I wouldn't understand the goings-on of grown-ups. It was not a pleasant experience."
"To her, you were the child," Kira told him.
"Kira envies me," he said. "She thinks that what happened to me was a privilege."
"It was," the elf insisted.
Yularion glanced at her for a moment, before turning his attention back to Kat.
"It certainly didn't feel like one. But that doesn't matter. What is important is her instruction that we must continue to protect the people of Lumnia to the very last. And, of course, the revelation that somehow you have done a great service to the world."
"What great service?"
Kat shook her head in frustration.
"What did I do, exactly?"
she wouldn't say, only that it had been done unwittingly. I wanted to press her for more, but you collapsed before I could ask. Then, the moment I touched you, something incredible happened. The dragon stirred. Cat's eyes shot wide.
Maitre's alive?
Yes, he affirmed. She lives.
Where is she now?
I don't know. Cat could see Kira leaning in, a tiny smile playing at the corners of her mouth. Ilarion glanced quickly over in the elf's direction before continuing. I was afraid the dragon would accidentally crush you, so I tried to drag you away. But it was as if you had become impossibly heavy. I couldn't move you at all. I was still trying to do this when the dragon rose right up and turned to face us. He paused for a dramatic moment before adding, That's when it spoke to me. Cat stiffened.
Maitre spoke?
Her father nodded. Indeed. And not in some vague way. In words, human words. She said that she must leave us now. Also to tell you that she will miss you greatly and is forever in your debt. I was far too stunned to be capable of saying anything in return. All I could do was stare like some slack-jawed fool. After that, she simply leapt into the air and flew away.
Is that all?
Cat pressed.
Did she say where she was going?
No, I've told you everything. He sighed. By this time, the light was fading, and the enemy had left the field completely. My guards were gathered a few yards away, all of them half-blind and terrified by what they had witnessed. From what I've been told since, none of them saw the dragon fly away. I was the only one. All everyone else saw was a blinding ball of light streaking across the sky until it vanished over the treetops. Luckily, your body was back to normal, and we were able to carry you away. You've remained unconscious ever since. I've been worried beyond measure, though Kira has been assuring me constantly throughout that you would awaken in time.
How long was I out? Cat asked. 2 days,
Kira told her.
This is not uncommon when someone has been touched by the pure, unfiltered power of Lumnia. And seeing as how your father had already told me of the spirit's assurance that you would remain unharmed, I was not concerned.
Ilarion grumbled. I, on the other hand, did not share her optimism.
But what about the healer saying that people might be afraid of me? Cat persisted.
Kira and her father exchanged glances. After a short silence, Ilarion cleared his throat. Yes, that. Well, it appears that since you've been unconscious, our entire army has been having nightmares about you.
Nightmares? What kind of nightmares? That's the strange thing. No one can remember.
Kira chipped in.
Just that you were there and that they were terrified on waking up.
Cat was unsure how to react to this.
Why would anyone be having bad dreams about her? Have you had these nightmares?
She asked. Both Kira and her father nodded. After an uncomfortably long silence, her father grabbed the flask and tossed it over to Kira. I'm sure they'll stop now that you've regained consciousness, he said.
I agree, added Kira after taking a drink. It's probably just some trick of Shinzan's, intended to instill fear and doubt into our hearts.
Despite her positive words, the way they came out was unconvincing. It was clear that she had found the experience to be more than a little disturbing. Yes, that's exactly what it is, declared Ilarion, his light and boisterous tone ringing equally hollow. Just another of Shinzan's tricks, and as with all his others, this one will fail too. They sat talking for a time longer. King Ilarion explained that the army had been marching north since the day of the battle. Many Althaeonan towns had been ravaged, and soon the capital itself would come under siege. He also said there had been no sign of Lailanora joining them yet, and wondered aloud what might have delayed her.
This was a little troubling to Cat, but she knew how much travelling spells drained her fellow mage. Most likely Lilinora had elected to come by horseback instead. To her great relief, there was better news of Liniel. He had already arrived, though had since gone on ahead to aid Queen Barathis in defence of her city. Soldiers began filing into the tent. Apparently, Cat had awoken during their mealtime, and now that it was over, most of them were ready to bed down for the night.
"I hope you don't mind the company," Kira said.
She had moved her bedroll directly next to Cat's, while Eularion had taken one immediately on the other side.
"Tents are in short supply. We must make do."
"I've slept in worse," Cat responded. She couldn't help but notice the odd looks the men were giving her. They were still afraid. Very afraid. But what could they have possibly witnessed her doing in their nightmares that would cause them so much fear? She decided to go along with Kira's earlier assessment. It was a trick planted in their minds by Shinzan. It had to be. They would forget soon enough, now that she had recovered consciousness. Her mind drifted to Ethan. She tried to imagine him safe and secure. But images of him in peril still managed to worm their way through, causing her heart to pound wildly and panic to rise. It was a long time before sleep eventually took hold of her. And when it did, her dreams were plagued by images of Ethan desperately battling to stay alive, fighting and losing.